New heading. Understanding and perception. As you learn to listen deeply to other people, you will discover tremendous differences in perception. You'll also begin to appreciate the impact that these differences can have as people try to work together in interdependent situations. You see the young woman, I see the old lady, and both of us can be right. You may look at the world through spouse-centered glasses. I may see it through the money-centered lens of economic concern. You may be scripted in the abundance mentality. I may be scripted in the scarcity mentality. You may approach problems from a highly visual, intuitive, holistic, right-brain paradigm. I may be very left-brained, very sequential, analytical, and verbal in my approach. Our perception can be vastly different. And yet we both have lived with our paradigms for years, thinking that they are facts, and questioning the character or the mental competence of anyone who can't see the facts. Now, with all of our differences, we're trying to work together in a marriage, in a job, in a community service project to manage resources and accomplish results. But how do we do it? How do we transcend the limits of our individual perceptions so that we can deeply communicate, so that we can cooperatively deal with the issues and come up with win-win solutions? The answer is Habit 5. It's the first step in the process of win-win. Even if, and especially when, the other person is not coming from that paradigm, always seek first to understand. This principle worked powerfully for one executive who shared with me the following experience. I was working with a small company that was in the process of negotiating a contract with a large national banking institution. This institution flew in their lawyers from San Francisco, their negotiator from Ohio, and presidents of two of their large banks to create an 8-person negotiating team. The company I worked with had decided to go for win-win or no deal. They wanted to significantly increase the level of service and the cost, but they had almost been overwhelmed with the demands of this large financial institution. The president of our company sat across the negotiating table and told them, "We would like for you to write the contract the way you want it, so that we can make sure we understand your needs and your concerns. We will then respond to those needs and concerns. Then we can talk about pricing." The members of the negotiating team were overwhelmed. They were astounded that they were going to have the opportunity to write the contract. They took 3 days to come up with a deal. When they presented it, the president said, "Now let's make sure that we understand what you want." And he went down the contract, rephrasing the content, reflecting the feeling, until he was sure that they were sure he understood what was important to them. "Yes, that's right. No, that's not exactly what we meant here. Yes, you've got it now." When he thoroughly understood their perspective, he proceeded to explain some concerns from his perspective, and they listened. They were ready to listen. They weren't fighting for air. What had started out as a very formal, low-trust, almost hostile atmosphere had turned into a fertile environment for synergy. At the conclusion of the discussions, the members of the negotiating team basically said, "We want to work with you. We want to do this deal. Let us know what the price is and we'll sign." Then seek to be understood. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. Knowing how to be understood is the other half of Habit 5, and it is equally critical in reaching win-win solutions. Earlier, we defined maturity as the balance between courage and consideration. Seeking to understand requires consideration. Seeking to be understood takes courage. Win-win requires a high degree of both. So it becomes important in interdependent situations for us to be understood. The early Greeks had a magnificent philosophy, which is embodied in 3 sequentially arranged words: ethos, pathos, and logos. I suggest that these 3 words contain the essence of seeking first to understand and making effective presentations, that of being understood. Ethos is your personal credibility, the faith people have in your integrity and competency, It's the trust that you inspire your emotional bank account. Pathos is the empathic side. It's the feeling. It means that you are in alignment with the emotional thrust of another person's communication. Logos is the logic, the reasoning part of the presentation. Notice the sequence. Ethos, pathos, logos. Your character and your relationship, and then the logic of your presentation. Isn't that interesting? This represents another major paradigm shift. Most people in making presentations go straight to the logos, the left brain logic of their ideas. They try to convince other people of the validity of that logic without first taking ethos and pathos into consideration. I had an acquaintance who was very frustrated because his boss was locked into what he felt was an unproductive leadership style. "Why doesn't he do anything?" he asked me. "I've talked to him about it. He's aware of it, but he does nothing." "Well, why don't you make an effective presentation?" I asked. "I did," was the reply. "How do you define effective?" "Who do they send back to school when the salesman doesn't sell? The buyer?" "Effective means it works. It means PPC. Did you create the change you wanted? Did you build the relationship in the process? What were the results of your presentation?" "I told you, he didn't do anything. He wouldn't listen." "Then make an effective presentation. You've got to empathize with his head and heart. You've got to get into his frame of mind. You've got to make your point simply and visually and describe the alternative he is in favor of better than he can himself. That will take some homework. Are you willing to do that?" "Why do I have to go through all of that?" he asked. In other words, you want him to change his whole leadership style, and you're not willing to change your method of presentation. "I guess so," he replied. "Well then," I said, "just smile about it and learn to live with it." "I can't live with it," he said. "It compromises my integrity." "Okay, then get to work on an effective presentation. That's in your circle of influence." In the end, he wouldn't do it. The investment seemed too great. Another acquaintance, a university professor, was willing to pay the price. He approached me one day and said, "Stephen, I can't get to first base in getting the funding I need for my research because my research is really not in the mainstream of this department's interests." After discussing his situation at some length, I suggested that he develop an effective presentation using ethos, pathos, and logos. "I know you're sincere and the research you want to do would bring great benefits. Describe the alternative they are in favor of better than they can themselves. Show that you understand them in depth. Then carefully explain the logic behind your request." "Well, I'll try," he said. "Do you want to practice with me?" I asked. He was willing, and so we dress rehearsed his approach. When he went in to make his presentation, he started by saying, "Now let me see if I first understand what your objectives are and what your concerns are about this presentation and my recommendation." He took the time to do it slowly and gradually. In the middle of his presentation, demonstrating his depth of understanding and respect for their point of view, a senior professor turned to another professor, nodded, turned back to him and said, "You've got your money." When you can present your own ideas clearly, specifically, visually, and most important, contextually, in the context of a deep understanding of their paradigms and concerns, you significantly increase the credibility of your ideas. You're not wrapped up in your own thing, delivering grandiose rhetoric from a soapbox. You really understand. What you're presenting may even be different from what you had originally thought, because in your effort to understand, you learned, you were influenced. Showing again that the key to human influence is first to be influenced, to understand. The human emotional factors transcend often the technical, logical factors. Habit 5 lifts you to greater accuracy, greater integrity in your presentations, and people know that. They know you're presenting the ideas which you genuinely believe, taking all known facts and perceptions into consideration, and that will benefit everyone. One-on-one. Habit 5 is so powerful because it is right in the middle of your circle of influence. Many factors in interdependent situations are in your circle of concern. The larger circle, outside your circle of influence, such as problems, disagreements, circumstances, other people's behavior. And if you focus your energies out there, you deplete them with little positive results. But you can always seek first to understand. That's something that's within your control. As you do that, as you focus on your circle of influence, you really deeply understand other people. You have accurate information to work with. You get to the heart of matters quickly. You build emotional bank accounts, and you give people a psychological air they need so that they can work together effectively. It's an inside-out approach. As you do it, watch what happens to your circle of influence. Because you really listen, you become influenceable. And being influenceable is the key to influencing others. Your circle begins to expand. You increase your ability to influence many of the things in your circle of concern. And watch what happens to you. The more deeply you understand other people, the more you will appreciate them, the more reverent you will feel about them. To touch the soul of another human being is to walk on holy ground. Habit 5 is something you can practice right now. The next time you communicate with anyone, you can put aside your own autobiography and genuinely seek to understand. Even when people don't want to open up about their problems, you can be empathic. You can sense their hearts, you can sense the hurt, and you can respond. You seem down today. They may say nothing. That's all right. You've shown understanding and respect. Don't push. Be patient. Be respectful. People don't have to open up verbally before you can empathize. You can empathize all the time with their behavior. You can be discerning, sensitive, and aware. And you can live outside your autobiography when that is needed. And if you're highly proactive, you can create opportunities to do preventative work. You don't have to wait until your son or daughter has a problem with school or you have your next business negotiation to seek first to understand. Spend time with your children now, one-on-one. Listen to them, understand them. Look at your home, at school life, at the challenges and the problems they're facing through their eyes. Build the emotional bank account. Give them air. Go out with your spouse on a regular basis. Have dinner or do something together you both enjoy. Listen to each other. Seek to understand. See life through each other's eyes. You have two ears and one mouth. Use them accordingly. My daily time with Sandra is something I wouldn't trade for anything. As well as seeking to understand each other, we often take time to actually practice empathic listening skills to help us in communicating with our children. We often share our different perceptions of the situation, and we role-play more effective approaches to difficult interpersonal family problems. I may act as if I were a son or a daughter requesting a special privilege, even though I haven't fulfilled a basic family responsibility, and Sandra plays herself. We interact back and forth and try to visualize the situation in a very real way so that we can train ourselves to be consistent in modeling and teaching correct principles to our children. Some of our most helpful role plays come from redoing a past difficult or stressful scene in which one of us blew it. The time you invest to deeply understand the people you love brings tremendous dividends in open communication. Many of the problems that plague families and marriages simply don't have time to fester and develop. The communication becomes so open that potential problems can be nipped in the bud. And there are great reserves of trust in the emotional bank account to handle the problems that do arise. In business, you can set up one-on-one time with your employees. Listen to them, understand them. Set up human resource accounting or stakeholder information systems in your business to get accurate, honest feedback at every level from customers, suppliers, and employees. Make the human element as important as the financial or the technical element. You save tremendous amounts of time, energy, and money when you tap into the human resources of a business at every level. When you listen, you learn. You also give people who work for you psychological air. You inspire loyalty that goes well beyond the 8-to-5 physical demands of the job. Remember, to succeed in the marketplace, you have to first succeed in the workplace. Seek first to understand in both places. Before the problems come up, before you try to evaluate and prescribe, before you try to present your own ideas, seek to understand. It's a powerful habit of effective interdependence. When we really, deeply understand each other, we open the door to creative solutions and third alternatives. Our differences are no longer stumbling blocks to communication and progress. Instead, they become the stepping stones to synergy.